Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksicles? What's going on? It's Mark Maron here. This is WTF. I got to tell you, man, I got to be honest with you folks. I am having a good time on set. There's something about being in this fourth season and just, you know, knowing what's up and knowing that it's probably going to be the last one and knowing that we've got this sort of full through line. This season is going to all be in order. There's a full seasonal arc with several different environments and they're all pretty much made up and just working with actors again and just being, you know, feeling comfortable and confident in the whole thing. Like today, what do we do today? Who do I work with today? Ron Stark is who I worked with today, and we really just started working together the other day, and it's fucking hilarious. And also, like, if you have not seen the show Maron, and I don't plug myself that much really, but all three seasons are on Netflix, and they do get better. I'm proud of all of them, but I think that a lot of people sort of were kind of disturbed and a little bit blown away by the season finale of the last season, but we are picking up a year later from that scenario. So think what you will. I have shaved off my mountain man style beard. I'm back to the traditional Mark Maron facial hair configuration. And it's weird. I'll tell you one thing that I realized about having a lot of hair when I did. I never had a beard like that before. And my hair was very long, is that there is a great freedom in not giving a fuck about how you look. Because like when you have a long fucked up hair and just a big old shitty beard, it's like, what's the point? What do you think is going to change? What is there to keep in order? Not much. You just don't want your beard fluffing out too much. So your head looks all weird and round, like some peculiar Shakespearean clown. I did get some flack from those people who didn't know why the beard was there about like, oh, you're one of those guys now. No, it was for a role, but I did like it. I did like the way it looked. I liked the gray in it. I think there's a beard in my future. When I fully give up, I think there's a beard in my future. I don't want my beard to represent anything trendy other than I don't give a fuck anymore. If I ever have a beard again, you will know that. I'm telling you honestly that if you see me in a beard in the future, it means I truly don't give a fuck anymore. What a liberating day that will be. But not liberating right now. Right now I'm well coiffed, have a mustache and a soul patch to maintain and a short haircut to worry about. And, you know, just trying to look good. Look for the, you know, look clean. But I can't wait to get to I don't give a fuck. But you people have to give a fuck. No, no. I got a lozenge stuck way down in my... Okay, I got it. Munching on these nicotine lozenges. Still. And God damn, I love them. And that's why I someday, folks, maybe when I grow the I don't give a fuck anymore beard, I'll rid myself of all compulsive behavior. I think I'm talking about a future Buddha, Mark, that wanders around with no self-loathing thoughts or self-critical assessments, with no vanity, no shame, no aggravated compulsive behaviors to relieve me of the stress of me. Just a bearded man dressed simply, not talking much and laughing inside because he truly doesn't give a fuck because he's free. That's my future. I don't know where that mark will be walking. I don't know what that mark will be doing. He will not be working. I fear that he may wander from town to town, giggling to himself through his beard, maybe stopping for not even coffee anymore. Maybe some mint tea like they drink in the Middle East. Some warm mint tea on a hot day. That's the one thing I learned in Jerusalem. I learned nothing mystical. There was no cathartic, you know, in retrospect, deeply spiritual moment. But I was baffled and confused by some of the Arab people who sold things in stores as they sat around and drank hot mint tea poured through like a lift. They lift the pot up and as they pour it, so there's a long stream of hot mint tea. And I remember saying, why the fuck do you drink hot tea, man? It's 100 degrees outside. But I didn't say that. I said, can I ask you a question? Why are you guys drinking hot tea? It's really hot out. And the fella told me, he said, well, your body's hot. It's 96 degrees in there. So if you dump a bunch of cold liquid into it, it's going to require energy to get that liquid to 96 degrees, to body temperature. So you're going to generate more heat trying to process the cold liquid than you would drinking some tea that's about body temperature. So it actually, the mint is cooling and the warmth of it will not generate any more heat within your body to cause you more heat. I always remembered that and I never listened to it. Did I mention who I had on the show today? Ben Hoffman had a show on Comedy Central a while back. I believe it was the Ben Show. Now, back when he was doing that, I didn't have him on here because I didn't think I liked him. I honestly did not think I liked this guy. There was something about him that rubbed me the wrong way. Now, some of you know when that happens, if you do a little further investigation, either they are truly rubbing you the wrong way because there's a problem, or they might be a little similar to you, and that's what you're reacting to. I don't like that guy because he seems to have something that I have inside of me that I don't find pleasant. Yeah. Whatever the reason, I didn't have him on then. And then I got this record in the mail. I didn't know what it was. It's very hard for me to keep track of shit because I do a lot of things and I get a lot of promotional material. I get a lot of records. I get a lot of books. Some of them are solicited, some aren't, but I just get this record and I get a lot of records, and it's this big country record. There's a dude on front. It's this guy, Wheeler Walker Jr. And it's just a classic cheesy country record cover with a dude sort of laying on, you know, holding his, he's laying, I think he's on his elbow. I think he's like, you know, just, he's got a big cowboy, got a big cowboy hat, got sunglasses. Very reminiscent of the country records that I remember from when I was a kid in New Mexico. And the thing was, is I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was a country record. And the record's called Redneck Shit. So there's this cowboy dude on the cover. And I'm like, wow, this guy's a little out of date, or maybe it's just classic country. I don't know why I'm getting it, but I do get country records. I enjoy country records. You know, and I'm like, wait a minute, is that fucking Ben Hoffman? That's fucking Ben Hoffman. So I listened to the record. And it's a real country record. I mean, it sounds good. The production is good. I mean, the songs are a bit crass and a bit shocking to some degree in terms of what you expect out of a country record. You know, one of them's called "Fuck You, Bitch." One of them's called "Better Off Beaten Off." One of them's called "Beer, Weed, and Coochie." One of them's called "Sit on My Face." One of them's called "Eating Pussy and Kicking Ass," which I remember seeing live years ago at a sketch show, and I know it was him. And then there's one called "Fighting, Fucking, Farting." Now, like, all right, I don't love parody records. I don't love joke records. But the thing about this record was it's beautifully produced music, and they're real country songs. If country would sort of loosen up a little bit, I think. So it's a tight parody in a way, but I just couldn't believe it was this kid, Ben Hoffman. And I was impressed with it. And I knew he rubbed me the wrong way, but I'm like, fuck it, I want to talk to Ben Hoffman. I like this idea, whatever the fuck this is. This Wheeler Walker Jr. business. So then we have this long conversation, which you'll hear in a moment. You know, and it turns out we have a lot in common. Only, you know, I'm a Jew from New Mexico. He's a Jew from Kentucky. And there was just, I don't know. You know, it's also part of my own sort of reconstruction around the South. Like over the years, I've, you know, become progressively more enamored with the South and, you know, very excited by it. And I love going there, and all the stereotypes have sort of, you know, faded away from me, you know, and to the point where I it's one of my favorite parts of the country. But now I get this opportunity to talk about this, you know, with this Jewish guy who grew up in Lexington, grew up listening to country music, and made this country record, you know, with real dudes. I mean, he made it with like the same crew that that does Jason Isbell Records, that does Sturgill Simpson Records. It was produced by Dave Cobb in Nashville. So we got into this conversation about people's understanding or misunderstanding about the stereotype of being Southern, and also about being a Jewish Southerner, and you know, about a lot of other things, but about country music specifically, because I'm a guy, I play music, I don't take myself that seriously. And, you know, Ben is a guy that created this character to do this music and really became enamored with playing the music and writing the songs and singing them in character. And we really just had a conversation about, you know, what is country music and who is entitled to call themselves a country musician or a country music record. And also just the fact that this is a guy that's not fundamentally a lifer music wise, but enjoyed playing music. So I don't know, man. He's got a very sort of strange frequency and persistency that I found. I had a good time with Ben Hoffman talking about all those things. And we are going to play a song from the record of his choosing at the end. You know, take it how you're going to take it. You know, it's a Wheeler Walker Jr. country music. But right now, let's go to my conversation with Ben Hoffman.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Hoffman.
Pull that thing into your face.
That's what I need to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'm kind of a germaphobe, so that's my, I think that's my issue.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Like, how bad?
Pretty bad. I mean, we're going right into it.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
No, I don't know.
Behavior therapy. I mean, I did the whole fucking thing.
You did what whole fucking thing?
I did the whole classes. I went to the...
For germophobia?
For OCD, yeah.
Oh, for OCD.
Yeah, I had to rub a dollar bill on my forehead. And...
Whoa, you're talking about this like, you know, everyone's like, oh yeah, the old...
Yeah, I always do that. I always explain. It's like, you know that thing, and yeah, no one's ever heard of it.
Where you have to rub a dollar bill on your face?
Well, they said graduation was to stick... This is not a joke, to stick your hand in the toilet.
Graduation was to stick your hand in the toilet.
I did not graduate. No fucking way. But no, but I did have to like touch the ground. It was like this new form of OCD therapy, and then you would like touch the ground and then touch your face and then not be able to wash your face or your hands for like 6 hours.
So this is like...
it's like overexposure, yeah.
Cognitive conditioning.
Yeah.
Almost like Pavlovian. Like,
yeah, exactly. So when you're in on a train holding the... That's nothing. I've touched the ground... I rubbed a dollar bill on my face.
I get I get the idea of it.
It didn't work. No.
It didn't work.
I think it worked as a reference point,
right?
But it, you know, I think you need to really stay on it to kind of do, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like when I shake some disgusting guy's hand. I'm not like, oh, remember I did this thing in this class.
And you don't have to wake up in the morning and just rub some money on your face. Yeah. Sleep with money.
It's not like going to the gym. I don't do it every morning.
Yeah. Do you go to the gym?
Well, I try to. I haven't been going as much.
But I mean, is that because of the germ thing or just because you're a lazy fuck?
That's more on the lazy fuck end. Yeah, some of these things get the lazy fuck OCD, anxiety, and neuroses. It's hard to know what's what.
Sometimes the OCD supports the lazy fuck rationalization.
Yeah, but sometimes the OCD helps. It's like, it doesn't work for me, but you could get obsessive about going to the gym.
Right.
I wish I had that OCD instead of the like.
But wait, how long have you had this OCD business?
Oh shit.
Your whole life?
My whole life. It got kind of unmanageable early 20s.
Like you fell into yourself? Like you couldn't get out of the house or you got afraid of your own hands?
It was bad enough that my parents noticed, cuz I remember one time I went out to meet some friends, and then I had to get gas. I went to the gas station. I'm like, "Oh, that pump is covered in
goo.
Chemicals." Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I went back home and I take a shower. I'm like, fuck it, what's the point of going out? I mean, like those kind of, I had a bunch of those kind of nights where it was like, ugh, the amount of work it takes to get out of the house.
Well, I've gotten into sort of a washing my hands thing, but I think that's healthy.
Yeah, I think it is. As long as it doesn't get in the way, I'm much better now, but as long as it doesn't get in the way of your life, it's like.
Yeah, but yours got unmanageable?
Yeah, I couldn't do anything.
Really?
Yeah.
So wait, now.
Now I just use it as an excuse.
Right. You can get out, you can, I can't. Because I got a thing.
Yeah, by the time I wash my hands, there's no way I can make it out tonight.
By the time I wash my hands again.
Yeah, it's 6 now. You want to meet at 9, it's not going to happen.
Because I have some hand washing to do. I don't want to explain it, but.
Oh, shit, that's Friday? That's shower night.
Yeah, that's several shower day. But, so you're not on TV anymore.
No. That also hurts the OCD.
Yeah. But what happened? So it was the, what was it? It was Ben, what was it called?
It was called The Ben Show.
The Ben Show.
And then some.
I feel like I met you during that. Like I was going to have you on. I probably would have saved the show.
By the way,
I apologize.
By the way, can I tell you what happened during that?
With me?
Yeah, with this show. I don't think I ever told you this.
I think I've only met you once.
No, we met a couple. I think we met a couple of times.
Well, I misunderstood you as being unpleasant.
Yes, okay. I'm not unpleasant, but this will explain it all. So my Twitter, which by the way, we both know Twitter's kind of a waste.
I gotta get out of it.
I gotta get out of it.
It feels, if you're OCD and also needy and also an addictive person, it's like torturing yourself.
It really is. So I decide my thing is just, it's just gonna be lies. I'm just gonna make up shit.
Oh, okay.
And because I like to fuck with people. I think, I don't know if you know, a couple of them actually got in the news because they thought it was real.
Really? So you did some about pranking?
No, when Obama was re-election, when Clooney had that thing for Obama,
yeah,
I tweeted as if I was there,
mm-hmm.
And I tweeted some like crazy. What was the one that got me in the news? I said that I pretended I was hanging out with Billy Gibbons the whole time.
Yeah,
he obviously wasn't there because it was like a press blackout, so no one was there. So I pretended like I was there, like Billy Gibbons.
Are you friends with Billy?
I've never even met him.
Yeah,
I started describing the speech.
Yeah,
and so that everyone's like, "Oh, this guy's at the speech." And
yeah,
and
then got one.
And then I go, "Obama's got kind of a racy thing there." He said, "I forget the exact quote I put. He said that Obama said that George Clooney's look at this crowd." George Clooney, knows a lot of people.
Yeah.
Clooney must have more pull than Travolta in a massage parlor or something
that. Like a racy joke.
Yeah, and then like all the press is just like, you wouldn't believe what Obama said. So then that got me excited. Like I could start fucking with people more.
Yeah.
And it never, like I think some Bieber one worked. For the most part, it's just me lying on Twitter and trying to get like 3 dudes in Idaho to believe me. And it never.
And it got traction because people thought you were really there?
Got traction.
How irresponsible is the fucking press that can happen?
Well,
that's hilarious.
It's amazing, but, and that was right around, but what I'm getting to about with you was, so then for no reason at all, when Seth Meyers got the late night gig, I was like, fucking shit, that was my gig. I go, it was down to this, again, I've never met Lorne, I've never met Seth Meyers, I was obviously the last person they would call for the audition for that.
Yeah.
I go, it was down to me, Tom Green, and Seth Meyers. All the NBC execs told me I had the gig, but they knew they would have to give it to Seth because of Lorne.
Yeah.
Again, repeating, don't know any of them. And then, of course, 10 people. Like, I was hoping it was like 1,000, but like 10 dudes are like, what happened? And I started explaining like how I nailed it and like NBC wanted to hire me.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, it was one of those things that nobody picked up on. So then I was like, I was so fucking bored. And I go, fuck this, I'm done. I'll explain it all on the WTF podcast Thursday.
Yeah.
And you just saw that last tweet and you go, I can't do Thursday. How about next week? And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like the one guy I didn't want to trick read it. And then, of course, by the laws of nature, I ran to you at Fogarty.
Yeah.
The next night.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck. Now I look like a fucking ass. Because I'm not going to call you back because you think I'm coming in to talk. I don't know how much you read backwards. You think I'm coming in to talk about the...
I don't think I put it all together.
I think you just saw that last tweet.
Yeah, like, all right, this guy wants to do the shows.
But I was demanding to come in. It was just said as a joke, and you read the last tweet, and I felt like an asshole, so I was like, I gotta, like, keep my distance for, like, a year.
Oh, so you were awkward? It's weird, because I didn't even register it that way. I don't remember putting it together as being part of some narrative.
Well, because you're a normal person, you weren't reading every tweet. You just saw the last one that referenced you.
Exactly. All I care about is me.
Yeah, but why would you go back and read my whole timeline?
The thing was is that I thought you were going to come on because of the Ben show. I couldn't tell the difference between your on-screen demeanor and what you might be.
Well, it wasn't that much different. I mean, I actually really liked the show. I mean, I still can't believe they aired the fucking thing, to be honest with you. It was pretty out there.
Yeah.
I think people kind of got it. To me, it was like, I'm going to do a sketch show. I'm going to show my real life, you know, kind of, you know, like what you and Louie are doing, but like, I'm just going to show my life.
Right. Yeah.
I think people thought I was doing a Kaufman or something, and it really was my fucking life. And then it was just like, your life's not that funny or exciting, you know? And then I mixed sketches. So then they really didn't know what it, basically when they call and like, you know, we're not airing this shit anymore.
Well, how did it start, the Ben show? Where did you fucking come from? Like, you're one of these guys where it's sort of like, oh, this guy's all over the place, and I don't know where who he is. And
yeah, well, I'm actually from Kentucky, believe it or not.
You grew up there?
Yeah, I grew up in Kentucky. My family's mostly from Tennessee. Jews from Tennessee and Kentucky.
Can you explain that to me, how that happened?
I don't...
Like, is there generations of Jews from Tennessee? Because I don't know that I've met that many Southern Jews, but I know they've been down there a long time.
Well, I knew my great-grandmother. She died when I was, like, 13.
Really?
And she almost made it to my bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
That killed her.
Yeah. The idea of it.
The idea of a bar mitzvah in Kentucky killed her. By the way, there were 4 bar mitzvahs in my class that year.
It must have been a very small temple.
I was... I'm not making this up. My temple was this creaky old building downtown. 4 of us.
In Lexington. Yeah.
Not really, you don't really get the cream of the crop rabbis down there. It's like, you know, it's where they go to die, literally. And this guy, blind one-legged rabbi.
Come on.
I swear to God, you can't make this stuff up.
You can, though.
You could make this stuff up, but I'm not. And you forget the blind people, the shades is not for them, it's for you.
Right.
But they were uncomfortable, so he took them off. So he's like, eyes rolling back in his head, Bahu, you know, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah.
I'm 10 years old. And then...
13.
And... No,
I know, this
leading
before?
Up to it, yeah. And he
So he's...
And his fake leg was uncomfortable. So he would put the fake leg, this giant, like, white plastic leg with, like, the black rabbi shoe and the black sock up on the table while he's doing his, you know, Hebrew. And the 4 of us...
Come on.
It sounds made up like a whole... you know, my mom would be dropping me off and I'm grabbing onto the fucking station wagon like, we don't want to go. And we're like... I remember telling the other parent, like, you don't... this is 11 years old or whatever. Like,
and you don't
understand. Like, this is a blind, one-legged man. He's taking his leg off. His eyes are rolling back. And he's talking this language that we don't understand.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And like, we don't want to go. It's just scary.
And
like,
you have a little brother?
I have 2 younger brothers, yeah.
So it's the 3 of you?
No, well, it was me and 3 other guys. They were, you know, in the class before us. Looking back, my parents were actually really smart about that stuff because I remember my dad, I remember like, you know, I don't want to do this. This is stupid. And he just was like, my dad had to do it. I had to do it. Your son left. Like, he skipped all the, like, when you become a... He skipped all the...
Right.
He knew that shit wasn't going to work.
Right.
He
just tradition.
Like, yeah.
Just shut up and do it.
Shut up and
you're
do it.
You're a
Jew. Was the thing.
So you remember... Your great-grandmother was alive, though, almost?
Yeah. Well, no, she... I remember her telling me they put her and her sister on a boat from Russia to Chattanooga, Tennessee in 1901.
Oh, really? Okay.
So my family goes back to...
Still that first generation immigrants kind of...
First generation immigrants.
Early 1900s.
But, yeah, like they got off the boat.
Because I think there were some Civil War Jews.
There were probably not... There can't be that many, right?
I don't know. I think I know that this information is out there, and maybe I'm just lazy because it's not the research project I want to be involved with, but...
Jews in the South, yeah.
Yeah, given the history of Jews in the import-export business, I have to assume that there must have been Jews that had come over from... you know, London or Europe that were probably involved in slave trading and God knows what. I mean, they've been around. Jews have been around for a while.
Yeah, all my family, and especially in the Nashville area, like Nashville and Chattanooga, mm-hmm. and like Murfreesboro around there, they all go way back. I mean, when I go back to Nashville, it's like, it was talking about the show. I remember a couple Thanksgivings. My middle brother's in a band. So he always
pretty big band, right? Scissor Sisters?
Yeah. So he always gets all the, you know, the props, and I'm always like, I got my own show. I was like, oh, fucking my turn.
Yeah.
So we take all the kids to a movie thing. We were in Nashville for Thanksgiving, and this woman comes up to me. She's like, Ben Hoffman? I'm like, I'm looking back at my brother, like, yeah, you fucker, see, check it out. Now it's my turn. She's like, I love the Ben show. I was like, fuck yeah, you do. It's, you know, everywhere I go, there's my fans.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, every episode's so funny. She's like, do you know? She's like, I know your cousin, Robbie. I was like, oh no way! How do you know him? She's like, I'm married to him. I was like, so you're my fucking cousin. It's not a star sighting.
Doesn't count.
Yeah. I've had dinner with. Like, you've been to my parents. Yeah. Like, what is this?
Yeah, it's not real.
And then of course that led back.
That your brother left.
But yeah, but I go back there and I just, it's a really big family in the. South.
So where were you born?
I was born actually in St. Louis because my dad is from St. Louis and he was, you know, doctor.
Oh, really?
And he was doing
what kind of doctor?
Internist.
What's
your dad?
Orthopedic. Okay. Used to be. So your dad's a general practitioner, basically.
Yeah,
full service doctor. Yeah, everything. Anything. Yeah, he's sort of like he knows a little bit about everything.
Well, not when I call, but yeah.
Yeah.
My youngest brother's a doctor.
Really?
Yeah. So.
So that guy turned out okay.
He's good. My other brother, I was always the one they were concerned about.
You were the oldest one?
I was the oldest. And like, you know, like when I got the show, that it wasn't like, oh, wow, he has a TV. It was like, I can't believe he's getting up. He's going to a job.
Uh-huh.
Like,
oh, right.
He's getting out of the shower at a decent time. You know, he's not watching, you know. I see him on TV. He's not having a nervous
functioning.
Breakdown. He's functioning. Yeah. So that was the bigger news.
But your brother's band was pretty big, right? Or
yeah, they were
still?
Huge.
So, I remember
they're on a kind of on hiatus right now. He actually just got a place out here. He's doing more writing and producing. But I mean, in England, there was this point there. And again, I'm some schmuck from Kentucky. I'd never known a famous person in my life. He was probably, you know, he's the first famous person I knew.
Your own brother.
And I used to play music growing up, so I was just like...
Playing music now? You got a new record.
I got a new record. Yeah, we got to talk about the record.
We will.
I'm not here for my health. I'm here to promote. So he was always... Your concept record. Yeah. He was always, you know, I was in the bands, and he was like, you know, kind of tagging along.
Right. You played in rock bands when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Like, how old are you?
I'm 41.
So, all right, so you and your two brothers are growing up little Jews in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Your younger brother, obviously, the more disciplined one, the youngest.
He's smart. He went to Columbia in New York.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is not really a cool rock star.
Smart people go to Brown. You know, the artists, the more artier ones usually come from Brown.
So he moved to New York.
He's Ivy League educated.
Yeah, and the youngest brother went to good school, and I was the one who was like, the hopeless.
Can't your brother play a lot of instruments?
Oh, yeah, he plays. Well, on the albums, he plays most of the instruments.
Yeah? But he's a bass player by nature?
I think he ended up playing... He switches around live on stage. I think he ended up playing bass mostly live because that was the hardest
one. Is he a wizard, though? Is he like a guitar wizard?
Yeah, I would say my brother's best quality, other than being gay, is... which, you know, has helped me a lot, is...
How has that helped you a lot?
Just met a lot of cool gay guys. You know, I wouldn't have met those guys without that.
Yeah.
He's really good. He has, like, the perfect right brain, left brain thing where he can, like, you know, fix... Like, his first record was one of the first... His first record sold I don't want to, you know, brag for him. We're here to talk about me. But his first record sold like 3 million copies in England alone, which means like...
A lot.
Means everyone bought it twice.
Yeah.
But that first record, I mean, he engineered it. He kind of built the computer that it played on, but also wrote this, you know, co-wrote the songs with his buddy Jason, who's the singer. So he was really, he has what I don't have, which is he can kind of do the technical stuff and the creative stuff.
Well, I think if you're like me, or if your anxiety is at a certain point, is just, you know, thinking about doing the technical stuff is just exhausting. Like, I'm going to take a nap just thinking about
it. Well, I was like, you know what? Everyone's doing these podcasts. I'm going to do a podcast. So I did, I spent like 2 days and I recorded the, you know, the song, you know, the Ben Hoffman podcast, Ben Hoffman. And I sent the song around to all my friends. They're like, I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, where's the podcast? You know, we're like, we don't want the song. Cause I then I realized all I wanted was the theme song. Like, I don't want to fucking do a podcast. So like, I spent all the time, like, that was the cool part for me. So I never
really. Just doing the song?
Yeah, and because I was wanting them to go, like, that's fucking badass.
Yeah. So did you do it on GarageBand?
No, my brother taught me how to use...
Pro Tools?
What's the Mac Pro Tools, Logic? Because I was in Kentucky, which, you know, in the 90s...
Lexington's nice. There's horses there. It's a horse town, right?
I'm a Jewish. I'm allergic to horses.
How are you not allergic to horses?
I swear to God.
You mean, like, mentally allergic or really, like...
No, I would go to the races with my friend, and I would swell up. I mean, like, my friends... And their parents were already anti-Semitic enough.
Yeah.
And then I show up at the horse races with them, and I like start swelling. I'm like, well, I don't want to go.
Are you serious?
Like the whiny Jew. I swear to God.
I'm trying.
I can't go to the horse races.
So what, you'd break out?
I spent my summers as a farmhand, and I would like just load up on Claritin. And I actually was back home recently. I ran.
How much is this bullshit? Are you bullshitting?
I swear this is all fucking real. You want Barry Esrine's number? I'll give it to you.
No,
he was the guy who ran the farm, and I ran into him recently. He says, like, I never told you, because there's Jewish farmers there.
Sure.
And he's like, I never told you, because your parents are friends of mine, but you were the worst farmhand we've ever had. Like, it wasn't even close. Number two is not even. That was probably 14.
So he was doing your parents a favor, gave you a job.
2 summers in a row, I was a farmhand.
But, like, what did you do? What was
My specialty was weed eating. You know what that is?
So that was your specialty.
That was my specialty. Because one of the few things I could fucking do. And then me and my buddy, John, one of the other Jews in town. This is mainly Jewish.
Right.
Jewish employee to farm. And we would go out and we would just hide. Because the farm is so big.
Yeah.
That you could see them coming for a mile. So we would just hide and, like, talk about, like, the new Guns N' Roses record or whatever it was.
I've done that.
And then when you see him coming, you like get up. And you're like, it's like the best one of all was that pick that I only thought was in cartoons, and you would go out on the street and you would like pick up all the
trash with the nail on top.
With the nail on top. Yes. I thought that was made up.
I think I made one of those because I thought it was the coolest thing I ever saw.
But the fun part about that is you would see it was on the highway, so you'd see all the crazy shit
that people would throw away,
like. All Polaroids and
there
like
was
that.
So much shit back
but that
then.
Was actually that was the one part like I could have seen myself doing that for a living. I just don't know if there's full time
picking shit. Well, there was sort of a mystery to it when there was more interesting things to throw away.
Well, compared to like mowing or like
right.
feeding horses and
things that people had to get out of the car quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And then I remember one time we did see the two guys in like the, you know, the orange suits like walking the other way.
Yeah,
so I'm getting paid a lot more than you to do.
Well, yeah, you could get that job. You just have to do something really wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But it was weird to be like, I thought I'm on the right path, but I'm doing
the same thing that guy.
The same like the punishment for prison.
The convicts are doing. Yeah. Where'd you go to college? Did you go to college?
I went off to. I went to two years at Tulane in New Orleans.
Oh yeah, that's
then
good.
I came back to finished at Kentucky.
Kentucky,
I couldn't handle
state going, or something.
Just University of Kentucky.
Yeah. You couldn't handle New Orleans?
I just wasn't ready for college, I don't think.
What, did you freak out? Were you one of those guys? Did you have to go to the doctor?
Well, I think it was when all this neuroses kind of started, and then I'm like away from home and, you know, like...
How did it manifest itself? Like, were you
just
like,
real neurosis? And then, of course, you know...
But you like, get there and you're like, what were you studying? Were you...
I didn't fuck. I was just so lost. I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to
do. So you're one of those guys that... Like,
basically, my parents met at Tulane.
Okay.
So in high school, I was like... Someone had told me, like, if you're like... what's it called? Legacy?
Mm-hmm.
You can get it. It's easier to get into a school. I'm like, I'll just apply there. And then I can get it out of the way. It's just like...
Yeah.
I'll just get in really fast. And I didn't think about it. I went there. I'm like, what the... what the fuck am I doing? And it was very strange school. It was like, you know, because I was thought of there as a hick.
Yeah.
You know, like some dude from Kentucky. And I'm like, fuck, I drove 12 hours due south to get here, you asshole. It's all these Jersey and New York kind of guys. Yeah. And I remember my mom would leave me messages on the machine. And they're like, you know, Benjamin, you know, give me a call. And they're like, ah, your mom's a redneck. I'm like, we're in fucking Louisiana.
Oh, because of the southern voice, the southern accent?
Yeah, back in the answer machine. I remember my brother said he had the same issue at
Columbia.
I remember him telling me once that some of the people in the dorm, I'd never heard of this one before. They said that, he's like, back before cell phones, he goes, your phone bills must be crazy. And he's like, why? He's like, because you talk so slow.
Really?
And I guess I've lost my accent. I don't
hear it really. A little.
I think maybe
very little.
I don't drink much, but when I do, I guess it comes out a little.
Does
bit.
It?
But came out on this record. I'll tell you that.
I think it's an important career shift.
Moving into country music.
Yeah,
that was my goal all along. That was the point of this. That's what the fucking show was for. The show was a way to get into music.
The Ben Show was just on the way to.
We did get cut off there. So anyway, it was called The Ben Show, but then there was a magician in Canada who had a magic show called The Ben Show.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no, that's a legal problem. I'm like,
Comedy Central said can't do it.
And I'm like, we went to The Ben Show website, this guy, this magician. The magic, it had like 50 views, probably all Comedy Central lawyers. Yeah. And he ends the show by saying, have a good afternoon.
Yeah.
It's a daytime magic show, live. Anyway, so they made me call it The Ben Show with Ben Hoffman, which is like the most pretentious. It's like, I don't need my name in it once, much less twice. So all of a sudden it's like, became, you know, like my name fucking everywhere.
But
like,
how long ago was that? The Ben Show was...
I was 39.
So, okay.
I'm 41 now. Yeah.
You're 41. So what the fuck...
38 when I got it. And well, I think the... I would say my first 8 years in L.A. was like...
So you were here 8 years before The Ben Show?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I think my first 8 years... It took me like 8 years to get to step one. And then like step one...
That's about right, though.
That's about right. But I'm saying then I skipped like five steps. You know, then I was working on Sports Show with Norm Macdonald.
But wait, so where do you... Okay, so you finished up college in Kentucky and you majored in what?
I think it ended up being like journalism, advertising, whatever was the, I remember whatever.
Whatever you could cobble together at the end?
Whatever these credits do, and they're like, how about advertising? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, cool, you get to work with cameras.
Yeah.
It's not really the same, yeah.
So you graduate college, and your parents are like, so what now?
I had no fucking clue. I mean,
did they say that? Like, because it seems like there's a big gap. Like, what you...
I moved here when I was 25.
Okay, all right, but when you left Kentucky...
I left Kentucky, and then...
Were your parents like, it's okay, Ben?
No. I don't remember it's okay. Listen, I love my parents and we get along really well, but it's okay, Ben was not, I don't remember that phrase. But I remember, so after college, I was literally like, I do not know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know anything about, you know, I was like, what's a job you want? I'm a rock star. I'd love to that. Where do you apply?
I still have a $20 guitar.
If I'd know my fucking brother could do it, I probably would have gone for it. But I remember some friends moved out to Portland, had a house in Portland, and it was like the rooms for like $250 a room.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, let's Portland. Out west. Sure. That's where I was meant to be, out west. That lasted about 6 months.
You went to Portland? What happened there? So wait, let's get back to something. So, and then, because I want to know better, because you have a fairly consistent demeanor here on the mic.
Yeah.
But at some point... that fragmented at some point.
Yeah, I mean, even when I lose my mind, I'm pretty mellow about it.
Really?
Yeah.
But when you say you went to college, because when I went to college freshman year, you know, I was pretty fucking lost, and you end up hanging around with a lot of different people to try and find yourself, or were you more isolating? Did you find a clique of dudes?
No, I was like, that was when
I... write for the paper?
I had nothing. I was like... Oh, I'll just get fucked up and hang.
Oh, so you what, booze? Coke?
Mainly
what?
Booze. I mean, I remember I'm just too neurotic for those stuff. I remember I did mushrooms once.
Yeah.
And decided to, I remember being at a porta potty at a outside a porta potty during Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
And deciding that I remember looking up at the sky, I was like, Lord, and I'm not a religious person, if you get me out of this, I will pay you back by becoming a rabbi. And then
that was your mushroom experience?
That was my mushroom experience. So I woke up the next morning, and I was like, I mean, of course, talking to the wall, like, listen, you don't want me to become a rabbi. I don't want to be a rabbi. Let's forget this happened.
I'm okay now.
Yeah, I'm fine. Like, let's just, I won't touch drugs. Yeah. You know, psychedelics are not my thing.
I like that you came down and still felt you needed to renegotiate.
No, I came down. I was like, I said some stuff last night that I shouldn't have said. But also, there's no world that wants me as, and also the idea that whatever my brain thought that becoming a rabbi would even it out.
Yeah,
is so weird. But I remember just, if you're gonna try psychedelics, Mardi Gras is not the place.
Shit, no, man. No,
I remember this guy. I remember I took it.
I only tripped during the day. Like I couldn't handle it that well. It was not my thing because
I hate it.
Well,
I hate
like it. I don't have I didn't have a strong enough sense of self to begin with. So expanding that, it just amplifies the vulnerability, and you know you just like feel like you're.
Well, that's what everyone was saying. It's like it'll expand your mind. I was like, it's like I want to shrink my mind.
I need to tighten it up.
I'm so fucking lost, and I'm thinking about so much crazy shit.
Yeah, right. And then you just go way out there. Like one time, I took mushrooms by myself in New York at night, and all the other times I'd done it was during the day with friends, where you're like, let's go outside, and it was okay. You could carry yourself. But like I was just by myself at night. I'm like, I'm going to go out. And I'm like, oh, no. It's just evil everywhere. So you're in Tulane for 2 years. You lose your shit a little bit, or you just didn't know what the fuck you're doing. You go back to Kentucky, so your parents are there, so at least you have some familiarity.
Do my laundry, yeah.
Right. And then you did your laundry at your parents' house, or your mom actually did it for you?
No, she stopped doing my laundry when I was like 10, yeah.
But you know, you tried to, you know, try to convince yourself that you were living your own life, I guess, a little bit? Or were they still supporting the confusion?
No, you can... Then after Kentucky, like 6 months in Portland, then I came. It was all these like starts and stops.
What happened in Portland though? That must have been.
It was just like nothing bad happened. That was when it was like, I got to figure out what this shit is. Like this.
So you're just living in a group house with a bunch of fucking stoners, and people are trying to figure shit out.
I mean, my buddy who I'm still friends with, he's like a city planner now. Like
in Portland.
And then he just moved to Seattle. He's doing city planning there.
So he got a real job.
Yeah, a couple of those guys got real jobs. A couple, who knows,
right,
where they are. And then I
just love that group housing. Like people, like not everybody lives that thing where you're just sort of like, I'm just going to move into this place with all these freaks. You don't really know them.
Yeah, well, I had one friend there, and the other four are just like,
what the fuck is happening?
Who are the fuck are
they? Yeah. And where's my food?
And then when you get your own place after that.
Yeah.
It's fucking heaven.
It's heaven, and then you just sort of like, well, now what do I do? That was my problem. You get your own place, and it's like, this is sad, too. Like, I liked having my own place in New York, but, like, I remember just napping a lot.
Yeah, it gets kind of depressing, but I just remember being so excited, like, it's my place, so nobody peed in the water, or, you know. Like,
yeah. And that was Chicago?
Well, then I moved to Chicago. Then I was like, that's when I was like, I'm going to try this comedy thing out.
Oh, okay.
So I start taking class at Second City.
But not stand-up necessarily, just comedy.
I've did stand-up 10 times in my life.
So you go to Chicago because of what? What inspires you? What'd you see?
Well, you know, I was just like, all these, like, what am I going to do? And I was like, I've always loved, you know, and I hate to sound like too much of a, you know, hayseed, but like, in Kentucky, like, I don't really even know that these jobs, like, I'm not stupid. I know the Different Strokes isn't an improv show, but the idea that like you can write the like because I wanted to be a writer, some sort of writer. I was like, but I'm not like I'm not a novelist,
right?
So
I'm still laughing about the renegotiation with God. Like I said some things.
I wonder if I still owe him. I would assume I'm in the clear now, right?
But just the idea that like, you know, I'll be a rabbi if you get me through this, and then the next day you're like, you know, that was. Some crazy talk.
Well, that's my thing, too, is like when people offer me drugs, I'm like, no. Because last time I did it, I decided to become a rabbi. I don't want any drug that makes me want to become a rabbi.
I'm desperate.
At the time, it sounded like a good... What's so crazy is at the time, it sounded like a good idea.
You could see yourself as a rabbi.
I actually literally could see myself as a rabbi.
You're going to use this horrible experience.
Well, then I could teach other people not to go down the path I took. And I would have been the worst fucking rabbi of all time.
So you know that you're not a novelist, and that you know you knew that Different Strokes wasn't an improv show, right?
Yeah,
so you had some sense.
So I'm like, but I can write. I know that. So I'm like, I was like, why don't I take classes at Second City, and then I could like kind of learn, not as wanting to be a performer, but like kind of learning just some kind of experience in, you know, I'm with people.
With a group,
with,
right, right. Do, who
and
is
some
it?
Great teachers. I don't.
Who'd you teach? Who is it? Who were
a bunch
teachers?
Of guys who were on. But I remember going down to see the show. Like, it must have been from their breaks from SNL. Like, seeing Tina Fey and Rachel Dratch and all that.
They were there?
On stage. Yeah, yeah. On the stage, not right. In the classes. What happened with me was a girl in my class was like, do you want to audition? She's like, I work at an advertising firm. Do you want to audition to be an extra in a commercial? I was like, well, what's it pay? She's like, $100. I was like, I'll never have to work again. Yes, yeah, yeah. Sounds great.
This is
and I go
thing.
Audition to be an extra, and I got the lead in the commercial, which was not, I mean.
Local commercial?
It was actually a national commercial. So
What commercial?
It was like a radio, it was a radio station, but they like, put, you know, like whatever, like K-Rock, but yeah, whatever, you know, whatever city, they would change the,
right, right,
the station thing. I was like, that's all I got to do to be in. I was like, I got some checks in the mail. I'm like, where's more of this?
Yeah.
And then I started doing Second City out in, out here.
Did you do the whole program?
Halfway through it is when I had this realization that I could actually be in commercials. It's like, that's the perfect plan. I'll do my writing during the day and then I'll fucking do commercials. And you've probably done these commercials before.
Never did.
You never did?
I think I auditioned for one or two and I was like, yeah.
I was awful at it, but you know, when you need this Jewish schlub, I could kind of do
right,
that.
Right, well, no, yeah, they like the everyman guy. I don't know, I don't fit anything. I'm just like this.
Well, I didn't really, but I also gotten a lot of, I remember getting, my thing was I didn't, and it was not a put on, I really didn't give a shit. I was just like, I would go to an audition and there'd be like, you know, for like Carl's Jr. and there's like 12 burgers there. Like, we need you to eat this burger while you're
look like
smiling.
You like it.
And I'm like, this burger's been sitting out all fucking day. I'm not eating this fucking thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll eat it if I book the commercial. Like, no, we need to see you eating the burger now. I was like, I'll just eat the bun. This meat has been sitting here. It was my,
right. The germaphobe steps in.
Like, I'm not eating this. It's like, if you don't eat the burger, you can't audition. Well, I go, like, you know, fuck this burger, fuck you, I'm out. And then I get a call like, we like his attitude. You know, maybe he's the guy who won't eat the burger, but then he talks to me. You know, so like, I was like working on my writing during the day, but the commercial stuff kind of can make you lazy because you can make enough to pay your bills,
yeah,
but not enough to like live, you know, like, yeah, today I'm going to go out, I'm going to go to the library and write a screenplay. And yeah, you stop by the mailbox, there's like $8,000 from some like Wendy's commercial, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to take a nap first because I'm good for a few months and then I'll go back.
So you leave Chicago with the big, with the commercial money. You drive out.
I got $600 in my pocket.
Yeah. You drive out?
Drive out with my Nissan Altima in the back.
Yeah.
And
you live with who?
I got my own, I had one person I knew here, which is my cousin's cousin, who wasn't officially related to me. I never met her before, but she's like, there's an opening in my building. It wasn't that expensive in West Hollywood. And I'm like, I'm here to fucking make it.
Yeah.
And 10 years later, I did for 8 weeks. 10 years later, I got a billboard on Sunset Boulevard that was up for a week.
That means something. I had one too. It was very exciting. I fought for it, my Epic special. I was like, and they're like, you know, billboards aren't effective. And I'm like, can you just put one in the city where show business is?
That is the point of the billboard.
Yeah.
Because, like,
it's not about promotion.
There's no fucking billboards for movies where I grew up. Like,
no,
there's billboards
cares?
For like furniture stores.
Yeah,
but it is. I would say that billboard probably helped my career more than anything because people are like, you go to meetings now. They're like, oh yeah, how
drove
you
past your thing.
Yeah, yeah, because yeah, like, they drove. That's
yeah.
It's only for themselves.
Yeah, I just wanted. To me, it was sort of like I just want to be validated, you know, on that level. I wanted to see a billboard, and they put one up there, and I don't think anybody watched the special. The billboard,
it is a big move because I remember my brother was in town, so we drove up to it and like he takes a picture, and then of course people driving down Sunset are like making fun of you. I remember this one guy goes, "Hey, you fucking loser! You never had a billboard before?" I'm like, no, I never had. What the fuck have you?
he
was like,
to you?
Yeah, he's like,
you loser.
It wasn't
guy with the billboard.
Of course, I'm surprised I'm not here every night taking pictures. But
right, so you move into West Hollywood and you got the big plan and then you sign up over at the Improv.
And then I was like going to start, you know, I wanted to be a comedy writer. And then I just start working or, you know, it's a hard.
But you did commercials.
Did commercials.
And that got you by?
That got me by, yeah.
You saved some money from that? I mean, did you make a lot of money?
I didn't make a lot. I mean, I had some day jobs here and there. Like I was like to age myself. I remember there was a, you know, not you.
You already said your age, so.
Yeah, but I guess naming my age ages myself.
Yeah.
But I had a job at, you know, like on your show where you grab all that generic music from that service. It used to be that they would, you actually have to call, like, you know, and get it on a CD.
Yeah.
I stocked those CDs at like people would call, like, I'm making a horror film and I need some horror music. And it's like, well, we've got 10 horror CDs filled with horror music. Ben will grab them and he'll send a messenger over to you and get them for you.
You're that guy?
Like, you fucking asshole. This sounds like,
yeah,
like Sound of Music. This is, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll send you some new stuff, sir. You know, yeah, that I was like the stock boy at the
music wholesale place.
The music wholesale place, which is now basically a website.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was going to say they lost tons of jobs, but they really only lost my job.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then.
It's so weird the jobs you get when you're in show, like when you're starting out in show business. Like the first time I came out here, I got a job, what do you call it when you write synopsises of screenplays?
Yeah.
They just give you a stack of screenplays and you're just supposed to
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Write a synopsis.
You would think it'd be awesome. Probably.
But I put too much, too much personality in them. In a weird turn, you know.
in a decision I would not have made.
Yeah, exactly. It was for like Canon Films back when that was around.
It is true. Those jobs, because especially, you know, Albuquerque.
They're jobs that people get you.
But Albuquerque or Kentucky, like the fact that this job, because I remember, so that my cousin's cousin,
yeah,
who I didn't even know.
I think it's like, actually called a script reader.
Yeah, yeah. Which to me, that was a job I would have died for. But my cousin's cousin had a friend who I didn't know. She's like, I was like, I need a job, just a job, you know, something to pay the bills. And she's like, oh, I used to work on the, you know, production company. I can get you a job as an assistant on some,
right?
You know, this new.
Oh, yeah, I did PA work, too.
Eddie Murphy, Robert De Niro film. I was like, you know, that'd be awesome. I actually get to see a film set. I get to see cameras. Everything.
Learn things.
So I go, they're like, your appointment to meet is like. 1 o'clock at Warner Brothers. Like, oh, I get to go in the Warner Brothers.
Isn't it exciting that first time you do that?
It's crazy. So I go there and I walk up to the woman. She's like, any friend of Elise's is a friend of mine. And I just smile. I don't know who Elise is. A friend of a friend of a friend. I don't know. Yeah, I love her.
Yeah.
She's great. You know.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that knowing her, quote unquote, knowing her, got me past like five different things. So literally, I'm waiting 8 hours at Warner Brothers for this interview. And I don't know. It was just, I was like, it's an assistant job. Just ask me whatever.
Yeah.
And again, true story. They're like, all right. And they're just like, you need to sign off from this guy, Bob. And like this guy, Bob, I was like, what the fuck is this guy, Bob? It's been 8 hours.
Yeah.
And they finally bring me in. It's like, Bob can meet you now. I go in there. Robert De Niro.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. It was to be his personal assistant.
Right.
And I'm, you know how like when you're so.
On the movie.
On the movie. I'd never had... I was so thrown off by seeing Robert De Niro in person in 3D that I was so relaxed. Because I remember he's like... I was like, I'll just be yourself. Do not lie. Just be yourself. He'll appreciate that. He's like, do you have any personal assistant experience? I'm like, no. He's like, are you good with children? I'm like, no. He's like, I've got dogs. Could you take care of the dogs? I'm like, no. I'm really bad with dogs. And I notice he starts laughing and stuff. And he starts crying. He's like, I'm interviewing the least qualified person. I've like, how the fuck? Because of this Elise person, I got through the gates.
Right.
And he just starts cracking up. And he's like, what could, like, if you could, like, if I need batteries on sets, could you go buy them? And I was like, I don't really know my way. I just moved here. I don't know my way around. And he goes, what do you want to do? I go, I want to make movies. But then I thought to myself, I was like, fuck, then they'll think I'm using him.
Right.
And he goes, have you made any, I made some short films. And he's like, how were they? So that's when I hit me like, you know, be self-deprecating. I go, they're the worst things you've ever seen, sir. And he just, that's when he loses it. And he's just like, so nice to meet you.
He's laughing?
He's cracking up. And the next day I get a call from the woman who's like, you know, his go-to woman. And she's like, I just want to say, Bob wanted me, like, we usually don't call when you don't get that, but like, Bob wanted me to call you because he loved you so much. But we have never met anyone less qualified for this job than you. You have zero of the like, he was basically, because he thought you were funny, like, he was trying to help you get the job. Like, can you take care? And I kept saying no, because, like, you know, can you drive a stick shift? Because I guess I was like, no. It's like everything he said, I said no to try to be like, he'll appreciate my honesty. At some point, you got to lie that you can do something.
Right. Get batteries.
But like those are the jobs I always like. And I remember one time someone, I went to a temp agency and they called me up. It was like a showbiz temp agency. And they're like, do you want to work for, we got a job at Tim Burton's production company. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. Big Tim Burton fan. Would love to, you know, be a PA there. I go, I notice it's kind of like a residential play. It's like, this is weird. And I go, it's a fucking, this really nice condo. And I walk in and it's just, and it's his wife at the time, her girlfriend, Lisa Marie, remember? She's like, do you know how to wrap presents? I'm like, no. I was like, I'll teach. I was in his fucking condo wrapping presents. She's like, and I remember delivering them to like Johnny Ramone.
Uh-huh.
Remember Nicolas Cage's like Jew eating dogs outside?
Yeah.
Like tried to attack. I was like, you just hire a temp to wrap your presents and then go deliver them to all like the major stars? It's like, but even then it was so exciting. I'm just like calling my friends back home.
Yeah.
I was just at Nicolas Cage's house.
Did you see Nicolas Cage?
No, he was, I think he'd been warned.
What was that, like a few days, that job? And that was that?
I think it was 2 days, yeah. I was wrapping, I learned how to wrap presents, delivered them to all of Tim Burton's friends, and then
that was it.
Just a seasonal job, yeah. He doesn't have presents year round.
So when, what would you consider your big break? I mean, so you're kicking around, you're writing shit, and you're doing improv?
Well, then I got a job kind of writing and being a correspondent on this, on what I consider Al Gore's tax write-off, which was that current TV channel.
Sure, I remember when that happened, because I was at Air America. So what was that, 2006?
Yeah, around then. And then Madeline, who co-created The Daily Show,
Smithberg?
Smithberg created the show that was supposed to be the young, hip Daily Show.
Oh, I kind of remember
and
this,
and it was neither of those things.
I kind of remember this.
Some executive came in, like, either there was an aberration or our ratings went way up last week. And I remember, and then the next week, they're like, it was an aberration.
What was it?
We had a 0.00. The ratings were a zero. Because then I got in trouble because I had a plan for them. I'm like, listen, it was right around those new HDs, TVs. I was like, listen, just try this. From 8 to 9. You air color bars. You put out ads that like channel 142 or whatever it was. That's the station you turn to like adjust your TV. Like that's funny advert. You know, that would at least get people to know in their brain, like, and see if the ratings go up.
This is for current though. So they have an agenda and
their
sense of humor is very
And good. I'm trying to do comedy, didn't work. But my big, leading to my big break was
how many shows did you do though?
Oh, I was there for a couple of years.
At Current?
Yeah.
Doing that show?
It was a gig. I mean, it was
all. So you were hosting it?
Hosting and writing. I mean, in fairness, I learned a lot. I mean, I was editing my own pieces, writing them, you know.
What was it called?
It's called Infomania. That's when I'm like in my early, mid-30s, like, this is enough with the joke. Like, I got to get a fucking job. Like, I came out here I want to do good shit. But
you learned on that show. You did.
I learned a lot, and then
made a living,
and I got my writing, my stuff over to Sports Show with Norm Macdonald, and Norm hired me on that show, and that was like that was what kind of started
everything. That was a network show.
That was the Comedy Central.
Yeah,
but it was like that was when I was like, because in my head, I was always like, listen, I'm not the smartest or the funniest guy, you know, but I think if I'm in the room with the best, smartest, funniest people, I can keep up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I'm I just need an opportunity just to be around these people and see if I can keep up. And that was, and, you know, everyone wants to write for Norm, and he's the funniest, to me, the funniest fucking guy ever. Yeah. And, you know, you get going from Current TV to, like, you know, I'm sharing an office with, like, Steve O'Donnell, who like ran Letterman for 13 years, and Jeff Martin, who, you know, Simpsons, Letterman, Conan, and Frank Sebastiano, like all these guys, like, you know, who I know the credits because I watch all these shows. And I'm like, holy shit! Like, and I'm not at their level,
right?
But I'm not getting laughed at,
right?
So that was kind of my big
laughed at in the wrong way.
Correct. Yeah, I was like, I'm not getting the most, but I can, I'm one of the gang, you know, like I'm not the...
You could hang.
I could hang, and I could get stuff on... I could make myself useful enough to get stuff
and
on
you got
air.
On camera too, right?
And then I got on camera, and then Comedy Central's like, you know, if you ever want to do a pilot, you know, come on, you know, we'll talk about it. And then I went in, and I told them about this idea for a pilot, and they gave me $50,000 to make a pilot, which, as you know, is like, you know... Yeah. Craft service money. But anyway, so I was just like, but then I met, you know, Mike Gibbons, who co-hosts
Fitz.
With the Fitz. So he co-created Tosh, and I'd met him on Norm's show. He co-ran that. And he was like, yeah, let's just, he's like, for $50,000, you don't have to talk to them. You don't have to listen to them.
Right.
We'll go make whatever the fuck we want to make. I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah.
And we made this fucking crazy
That was thing. the one with where you go to the therapist?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like me and like girls who dumped me, and like it was just kind of my real life mixed with kind of. I was trying to do a narrative sketch show, showing my real life, and we turned it in, and they were like, they thought it was a joke. They're like, it was X-rated. I mean, it was so dirty.
Yeah,
and it was one of those things where like kind of the assistants around them started picking it up and laughing.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, this is really funny. And then again, when they were done, I was like.
What, 14? 13?
Fuck, 14. No, what am I, Rockefeller? No, I did 8.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had no lead in or anything. I mean, the ratings weren't awful, but it was, they let me know it was not a ratings decision. It was like, we don't want this on TV. Well, but they're really cool about it.
Did it come down to you and Nathan?
I think it, you know what? I hate to say that because I love Nathan's show and Nathan's a friend, but I wish they hadn't told me, but yeah, it was like, they told me.
We've only got one room for one on the street Jew.
Yeah, we can only have one Jew walking the streets with the camera per LA law. But I think, you know, it was the right decision. His show is so great that it's hard to argue with that decision. He just has like that's like a show with a clear point of view and like a thing where mine was just kind of me dicking around.
Yeah.
So it kind of made sense. And again, when I did a pilot for them 6 months after my...
What was that?
I actually, I don't want to throw names, but so Danny McBride and his whole gang were fans of the show, and they're like, he had this idea. Actually, I thought this was a really funny pilot. He had this idea where, like, I had a talk show where I had lost my TV show. I had to move back in with my parents, move into my parents' basement.
Yeah.
And have to have celebrities come over and spend. Sure. It was called Sleeping with Ben. And
yeah.
It was really weird. I mean, it was like much weirder than I'm explaining. And they're like, we want you back on the air. We want to do it. And then they watched it, and they're like, I think we're good. You know, I think we're okay. I think we've had enough off. But I still, I mean, I did a couple, you know, wrote on some of the roast and some of the other.
Oh, you did?
Shit like that, too. So
I'm
still on good terms. Giving me the show was a much bigger deal than taking it away.
Yeah.
And getting that show led to a lot of cool stuff. A lot of cool stuff that didn't air, but.
Well, let's talk about the album, because, like, you know, it's so funny, because before I actually, maybe I wasn't paying attention that you'd been pitched, but I get a lot of CDs from a lot of different record places just out of nowhere.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I saw this one, and I'm like, is this guy related to Jerry Jaff, or what the fuck? Because I get you.
This was the first, because I'm only doing press for this album in character. And then when LaBeouf called about this, I'm like, I'm not doing this, and like the show. Like,
that'd be a long hour.
It'd be a long hour, but also as a fan of the show, I wouldn't want to listen to me, and I barely want to listen to me as me, like much less listen to me in like this character. But
so Wheeler Walker Jr., the album is Redneck Shit.
Yeah.
So like, let's play it like as if just that.
Well,
curiosity.
Here was the idea.
But I'd like to talk to the character for a minute.
And it's really just me, with a little bit of a. It's too embarrassing. That's the thing too. Is like I don't want to do it in character because it's really just me.
Have you done any of that press for radio?
Oh, tons. Yeah, yeah. Oh, not tons, but yeah, yeah. We've done we just played with David Allan Coe in Nashville.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. No, but I do.
And you put on the getup?
Oh yeah. No, I go to podcasts in that getup, and then they come afterwards. And they're like, "Hey Ben," I'm like, "I don't know who you're talking about." Like I just really enjoy fucking with people, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But the album itself is. I mean, listen, you can read the song titles and know it's a comedy record.
Right, right.
But it's a legit... I love country music. I mean, obviously, I grew up in the South and grew
up... Who were your guys?
I It's funny, the guys who produced it and played with me on the record have kind of the same trajectory as me, which is, you know, you grow up with it, Waylon and all those guys around, then you go through your rock phase.
Right.
Then you kind of move away and you're like, fuck, I fucking...
You
then,
miss it?
Then one of your hipster buddies puts on Waylon. I'm like, fuck you, motherfucker. Like, my uncle lives down the street from, you know, like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I just love Waylon and Willie and, yeah. you know, I love the Leuven Brothers old stuff and Everly Brothers and... I was listening to so much George Jones. George Jones is one of my favorites. This
the
guy,
best.
He's produced George Jones.
The guy who produced this produced George Jones?
Well, Dave Cobb is the producer. I don't want to get him too much trouble. He's probably the hottest country producer out there right now. Not a joke. He
yeah.
did that new Chris Stapleton record and did uh-huh. Sturgill Simpson and Jason Isbell and all those guys.
I love
all these
that.
All those guys I love. And I met him through some people.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've always wanted to make a country record, like yeah. a legit country record.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, okay, it's going to come out as comedy if I do it. And I played him some demos, and he's like, let's fucking do it. Like, he was just like, I was expecting, it almost freaked me out too much. Like, I was like,
yeah,
like maybe it's I've got the wrong Dave Cobb or something. Like, maybe
yeah.
it's a scam. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be in Nashville on Thanksgiving if you can do it for a few days there. So, like, I grabbed his kind of go-to band, who are now buddies of mine. They played on Sturgill's first record, Shooter's old band. Some of these guys toured with Jamie Johnson. They played with Will. I mean, they played with George, all these guys. They played with all these, and they're the best musicians.
Are they old guys?
They're around, I mean, they were younger when they played, you know, with the older guys, but they're, you know, around our age,
yeah.
kind of. And the best musicians I've ever heard. And I went to the studio. It's the first thing I've ever done where I walked out, and it was like, this is better than I thought. Like, this is a fucking killer country album.
Right.
Like, what the fuck just happened? Because, you know, like I said, it is a comedy record. Don't get me wrong. But I really do have such a passion for country music.
No, I listen to it. And it's like, it sounds like a country record.
It is a country. That's
And even some of the titles, I mean, it's just, you know.
There's one called, like, I Can't Fuck You Off My Mind. Like, that's just, I can't drink you off my mind. We just kind of, you know, I try
yeah,
to change
well, said, you know, fucking someone out of your heart is something. I've said that before.
Yeah, and
it's a real thing.
And so it's like, I just love country music so much. And I was like, it wasn't really my plan when I went into it. I was like, obviously, I just wanted to make, like the most legit comedy,
right?
Authentic country comedy record ever made.
But the character, so, you know, when you go out and you're performing it,
yeah,
and you
I'm just
go,
now starting to yeah,
and you go out with the hat, and how's that feel? Great,
it's so much fucking fun. Because I always was envious of like you guys who had your stand up. You can go do your yeah. thing, whatever you want, and I go play these shows, and I got the cowboy, and I'm like, yeah, fuck you, and it's like this attitude, this
yeah.
all the stuff building up inside. Obviously,
yeah.
this is
sure
this is the therapist part. There's all this fuck you and like fuck mainstream country, fuck because I yeah. do get pissed when I hear this kind of mainstream country slop.
Uh huh.
And I hear, and also because of, it's also weird for me too, like I said, having all the family back in Nashville. I grew up with this kind of, Nashville was a fucking ghost town. And now it's the hippest place.
Yeah.
Now it's Hipsterville.
Yeah.
And I go back there and these dumps are, you know, $2,000 a month. And like, it's just, it's kind of a new town. It's really slick stuff. And I'm like, there are some people doing, you know, what I consider real country, but there's not that much of it. It's like, what if I could do both? What if I can make a country record and a comedy? What if I can make a comedy record, but actually make it legit country? I mean,
yeah.
do it with these guys who are playing on these guys who are playing on my and making my favorite country record.
Right. So, what's the plan then?
The
Ben?
Plan is, well, this is really, I mean, my guess is that the fans that we're marketing this to, none of the, it's like, this is a whole different, it's
right.
really going to, like, Mojo's been playing a lot on Outlaw Countries.
Yeah.
So it's really like we're doing it legit country. We're doing country venues. And
so you'll play a whole set. You playing guitar?
I play guitar and sing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was the part I was, you know, self-conscious about was my vocals. And he's
yeah.
like, no, it sounds good.
So
and then you get into the argument, too, of like, what is authentic country? You know, because I'm in the studio there and like these guys, you know, to them, I'm this guy from Hollywood who came out and made a record. I mean, we're friends now. But the first day or two, it was like the studio guys and the, you know, they're like, this guy's from a TV show comes out to make this record.
Right.
I'm like, we're literally, out that window is the high school my mom went to.
Yeah.
Like, you're from fucking Ohio.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Fuck you. Like, what is, you know.
Right.
Like, these guys who put on their cowboy hats and the Actually, there was one really good article, because I'm trying not to use my real name in the shit, but one guy wrote a really good article about kind of like, why is this any less authentic than regular? Like, these guys aren't actually cowboys that you're watching, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of the joke to it, too. But if the goal was to make it, you know, we want to do a comedy special, we'll see what happens with that. But the goal was to make it, you know, as legitimate and real and good sounding of a country record as
possible. Yeah.
If it works on both levels. And right now, the majority, I don't think it's really made for the comedy crowd, because I don't know if they listen to this type of music.
My concern, or not even concern, was like, who, because it's not really a novelty record. You know, it's a dirty country record, which, you know, it has been done before at different points of time as novelty records.
Well, that was
by country performers, but you're doing a whole other thing.
Well, that was the thing. First of all, the whole thing was, it's like everything I do. It's like when I go, I was in the studio, I was listening to the, we're listening back to the masters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is so fucking catchy. And plus it's so funny. Like it's for everybody. Then of course,
it's people's music.
It was the same thing when I did my show. It was like, this is for everyone.
Yeah.
This is going to be the biggest fucking thing in the world.
Did you write Watch Black Women Hug?
Black Women Hug? Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
I recorded that on my Logic at home.
Yeah.
And then I come home, I'm like, this type of country music isn't played on the radio.
Right.
And comedy people really aren't. And then I'm like, fuck.
Who the fuck?
I just did something.
No.
I did it out of pure passion because I literally paid for the record.
Yeah.
Like, I own the this label's putting it out, but I own the masters.
Right.
Like, I could put a stop to it right now.
Right.
Which the government may make me do.
Yeah, it's racy stuff.
But I was like, this is something I want to do, and I'm going to do it, and it's going to sell a million copies. First of all, nobody sells. Well, I did a Billboard interview in character, and I promised in the interview as Wheeler Walker Jr. that I was going to, that my video was going to get more views than Adele.
Yeah.
We lost that by about 100 million.
Yeah.
But, you know, like that kind of brash.
You did a music video though?
Yeah, we've done two now. I'm just more curious. I just can't wait to get the album out because I just want to see people's reaction, but I also want, I'm hoping there will be some sort of reaction. I mean,
is it released already?
February 12th.
Oh yeah.
So my main goal, the only thing I care about,
yeah,
is, and I've heard it a couple times, is, you know, and I don't give a fuck hearing about it, but there's like, oh, it's some fucking dude from Jersey coming down making fun of us Southerners, just because you don't know.
It's so weird because you've had it both ways.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird being I think a Jew in a way and being in culture a certain way, but like just like the kind of flack you got at Tulane, now the Southerners you're afraid are going to put that on you.
Exactly.
But well, you're not from Jersey.
Exactly. Well, I'm just saying they don't know.
Yeah.
They just think it's some guy in a costume. So it's some Hollywood dude. But in no way, like, it's not making fun of the South. It's really done out of passion for country music.
Yeah.
I just love this form of music that's going away. And it's so rich. I mean, it's like, you know, like Sturgill's still doing it and Jason, those guys. But it's really, Merle's left, Willie's left. There's not, Billy Joe's still around. There's not much of those guys around.
No, there aren't.
And I wanted to do a record, like I said, I wanted, as a musician my whole life, you're the same way, you're a musician. It's like, what if I could do, and then you get the excuse of saying, oh, it's just, you know.
Right, but you know, and also like there's something about the nature of a stage persona and a character and
the fun part for me.
And a performing outfit. I mean, I guess the real difference is that, you know, this music may not be far from your heart, but the character itself, like there was a time where those type of guys, like even, you know, Jerry Jeff or Waylon at certain points, of this certain kind of like borderline outlaw character, that, you know, they were earnest and they were really that guy. And
yeah,
they lived that life. So I think the only real, you know, mockery would be in that you created this character to honor those guys, not necessarily to make fun of them, but you're not that guy.
Exactly. Well, but also were they, I mean, they were certainly more outlaw than me, but they weren't going around shooting.
No, but you know what I mean.
I know what you're saying. But
what sold that, and this isn't like, it doesn't look like this character is essentially, this is sort of a newer version, but you know, it's not Chris Waylon and Willie and.
It ended up sounding a little. I was listening to so much George Jones at the time that I was like I'm ripping off George Jones.
Well, that's good. That's a real clean production.
But when you try to rip off someone who's that out of reach, it kind of comes off as original because you can't.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about George Jones is he was even more fucked up than his character.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, he was sort of like a mainstream country guy who didn't wear a cowboy hat, wore a suit and whatnot, but he was fucking crazy drunk man. Oh, yeah. Genius.
How many ditches did he drive off?
Tractor story is great.
A bunch.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny because I think the thing that makes it really different is that you're not seeking to make fun of the form. You're actually seeking to embrace it in the way that you are capable of doing it.
Well, a couple of the people who I won't name who in Nashville are just like, listen, you've got to go for it. Like, Nashville's become so shitty. You're the guy. You're going to go out there and talk about, and you're going to wipe these people off the map. I was like, but fuck you, bitch, ain't getting played on, you know, K90 or whatever, you know,
right.
It is. So
it'd be great if one could break through.
Well, couple stations that when they bleep it, there's nothing left. You know, it's just like...
Sure. Well, that was that might have been a little short-sighted on your part.
Well, I wasn't thinking that. I was just... I'm an outlaw. I was at the time. I'm just thinking. I'm thinking the best.
You're living it.
But it was funny, too, because I was down there and I was, you know, again, listening to playback and I'm looking at the musicians. And I'm like, isn't it a bummer that, like, if I just made clean versions of this, they're so catchy that they get played on the radio. And they all look at me at the same time. They're like, have you fucking heard country radio recently?
Right.
It's fucking... Milli Vanilli with
no, it's
twang.
Like it's almost like Def Leppard. It's like
Def Leppard's a good example where it was just like, oh, he's got one arm. We'll figure it out. You know, we'll do
just
the electronic
mainstream,
drum.
Yeah, mainstream kind of rock riffs.
Well, I heard this
from the 80s,
and again, I mean, a lot of it's. I mean, with rap, I mean, it's hip hop kind of.
Some of it, yeah, it's
and
wild.
Some of the country producers I know actually had some interesting conversations with them. Just keep. Their whole
like
thing
who,
is like
Mutt Lang. Were you talking to Mutt Lang?
I've not spoken with Mutt Lang yet. Yeah. But these guys are just like, because the really good producers in Nashville, they still know all the Bowie and Eno, and
sure,
you know they know
course.
All the shit.
Well, they're musicians,
and they're like,
and they've also had rock guys go down there and use their musicians for years.
Okay, I mean Dylan,
did
that
it, and the Stones did it, and you know,
I mean that was his best records was those Nashville.
Yeah,
records.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're just like these. These sounds they're using, their whole thing is like these sounds that the new country guys are using are 20 years old. Like there's new stuff out there. You know, it's not like they're not mixing LCD sound system with country. They're mixing like fucking Milli Vanilli, you know, old,
sure.
And it just sounds like fucking garbage. And there's really no place to hear this type of music anymore.
Well, thank God you're championing it, Ben.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here for.
And you're okay? You're making a living?
Making a living. We'll see.
Got a woman?
Don't have a woman. That's kind of the main issue. If you were to talk to my parents, that
sure.
They're kind of upset.
When's
about.
That going
to
happen?
Once I kind of get my career in order, so probably 65.
Sure, that sounds about right.
70.
Medicine? No medicine.
Am I on medicine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do another hour? I don't know if we have that kind of time.
But you're
I'm
properly medicated.
I'm properly. It's all
living
it's,
your life.
It's all prescribed. I got a new thing with the where they the company sends it to your house. Don't you have to go to Rite Aid
anymore?
Oh, really?
Oh, good. You on for the anxiety and the OCD?
Anxiety and OCD. Anxiety is really the main issue.
Me too.
With.
What do you take?
I take Klonopin when needed.
Oh, see, I can't do that.
Why?
Because I'm a fucking drug addict.
I don't.
There'd
find
be no
it,
reason not to take Klonopin eventually.
Well. I find it, it doesn't, yeah, I mean, that of all my maladies I was talking about, I really did get lucky, because I know a lot of friends who've gone down this road. I just don't have that.
The addiction thing?
I don't have the addiction
So when you
thing.
Take a Klonopin, what's it good for, 6 hours or so?
Yeah, I'm really sensitive to it, so it lasts actually a little longer for me.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, you know, like we opened up for David Allen Coe. This as an example, a month ago, and as I had a you know bunch of friends in Nashville and family, like let's go out and party. Drank all night, haven't drank since. Didn't drink them. Like I just got lucky.
Be
that,
careful with the Klonopin and the drinking.
Yeah, I don't mix them. But I mean, I was like, I gotta have my Klonopin the day before because I plan my drinking.
Sure,
I have to plan. But I just realized now I haven't had a drink. Yeah, like, I just got lucky that
Klonopin and booze. That's an instant blackout recipe. You'll lose about
well,
4 hours.
Well, one of my buddies was on at least that because he definitely it was funny too. I was that Fogerty concert. I said,
oh, yeah.
Buddy of mine blacked out that show,
lost it,
but he lost it. But I don't know why it just came into my head. But He brought, I mean, this was a kind of a no-brainer joke, but it always makes me laugh. And he was fucked up. And Fogerty brought his son out to play guitar, I don't know if you remember. And he just looks over me and goes, "Fortunate son." And he, go-to joke, but it made me
laugh. That was a good one. So now, all right, well, let's figure this out. So you own the rights to these songs.
Yep.
And this is your record. So theoretically, which is something we don't get to do on this show very often because of labels and whatnot, we could play a song, I think.
You can play whatever the fuck you want.
We could play it on this show.
I own the publishing. I own the, yeah.
Which one should we play if we're going to give people a taste of this thing?
You want a ballad? You want a...
I want the one that is most heartfelt for you, Ben. Or, well, or should I call you Wheeler?
The most heartfelt one everyone says is "Fuck You, Bitch."
Uh-huh.
And that's got a real nice country production sound to it. Want to play the hit?
Yeah.
Let's play the hit. Hit in quotes. Fuck you, bitch. Play "Fuck You, Bitch."
All right. Well, thanks for talking, Ben.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been a blast.
You say we're done. You packed up your stuff. It's really over. Said you've had enough. There's one thing I'd like to say before you leave. Hey. Fuck you, bitch. You broke my heart. Fuck your friends, tearing us apart. Fuck your dog. Hope he never. On the cell, but before I swipe on your face, I just scream. Hey. Fuck you, bitch. You broke my heart. Fuck your friends, tearing us apart. Fuck your dog.
All right, so that's our show. I guess there's really no reason for me to play. We just had a song. I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed it. I like talking to Ben. Go buy that Wheeler Walker Jr. record, man. It's the hottest thing in country music right now. The debut album, Redneck Shit, comes out tomorrow, February 12th. Okay, so now you know that. So yeah, go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get on the mailing list. Pick up a poster if you want it. Do what you got to do.
comment through Facebook. Check my schedule. I do have a few gigs coming up in April. And okay. God, I haven't done one of these without music in a while. Boomer Lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.